Prostitutes, of course, they have formed their own trade union. Yeah, they call it the Personal Service Workers Union. And they're starting branches in all major cities in Turkey. I like to see the labor movement, you know, progress, move forward. Speaking of, everybody's talking, you know, the whole women bit these days is very, very, you know, it's relevant, right? Relevant to our time. And for those of you who are into women's lib and, you know, are involved in the whole movement, you should know what's going on in Port Moresby. Just a little news note. You won't hear this on the Walter Cronkite News, this kind of stuff. This is where you got to come to these places to get, you know, you got to come right down here to get the real stuff. In Port Moresby. You know where that is? It's out in the Pacific, you know. Port Moresby. This is the way women are treated out there. Oh, wow. The latest official quotations on the Papua New Guinea bride market have been revealed. You know, they have a government report released. This is official. Yesterday said that a woman marrying for the first time in the remote Jimi Valley in Papua is worth no more than $240, five pigs and one cassowary, which is a large flightless bird. You know what the cassowary is. Well, a cassowary is like a big ostrich, you know. I don't know why you had to throw in an ostrich. But that's down, in case you're interested. Just a few years ago, a woman of the same type went for something like $310, seven pigs, and two cassowaries. So the point that I'm making here is the bride market is very much depressed out there in Papua. A woman married once before, this is according to the government report, is worth no more now than $30. $30, used, you know, two pigs and a cassowary. And, you know, you got to walk around and kick the tires, I'm sure, before you make a deal like that. And the last remark they have here is really sad. For women who are married more than once, the official government council issued this totally ungentlemanly judgment, and we quote, such women are of no commercial value. None at all. Can you imagine Gloria Steinem giving a lecture in Papua? I just want to try something here, gang. You mind if I... Let's see. Beep, 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 beep You like that, don't you, George? All right, go ahead. You can bring it on. Thank you, George. Thank you. Thank you. That was very good. Very good. You know, speaking of women's news here, since we're bringing all these bad things to light here, very interesting little note coming out of, you know, the whole equal pay thing, you know, that everybody's after, and rightly so. However, has another side to it, the equal pay thing. They had a big, very official investigation in England. Recently, you know, the Labour government and all that was working on it. And the question was, what does a woman do when she gets equal pay with a man? I mean, what does she actually do with this money? Well, and here's what they found. Quite often, she goes out and gets equally drunk. According to a Liverpool expert, the finding came in a book published by Dr. W.H. Kenyon, executive director of the Merseyside Council on Alcoholism. Dr. Kenyon said equal pay and opportunity for women was linked closely with the equal risk of becoming one of the 500,000 alcoholics in England. And we quote here, emancipation of the female, together with the government movement towards equal pay and the desire of the working wife to obtain a better standard of living, have led to an increased, significant increase in the proportion of alcoholics among the female peoples. Dr. Kenyon wrote, go out and get bombed. Well, all right. That's a, why not have equal right to get bombed if you want to do it? That's, a, you know, same scene. You know, speaking of ramifications of great movements today, one way or another, there's things you never think much about. You know what they did the other day? They took, according to a note that I got here from one of my spies, in England, incidentally, that they took a bunch of kids in Leeds. Now, Leeds is a big industrial town. Now, Leeds is like almost like the Pittsburgh of England. It's a big mill town, the steel mills and all that stuff. And these kids lived right in the middle of the city. And they took these kids out in the country. You know, the kids that lived in the city there, and they were between the ages of 5 and 9. They took them out, and they were completely baffled by what they saw out there, these kids. They did not recognize cows and sheep. They didn't know what they were. They were baffled. However, when they showed them a lion and tiger, they instantly knew what it was because they saw that on television. Now, that's true. Have you noticed what a hang-up TV has got on lions? What is it with lions and television? They're always on TV. And if they're not on TV, tigers are on TV. But lions make it more than tigers. Okay? It's because there's more lions than there are tigers. But what is it with this Jack Parr and the lion bit? Well, he's going to hang up on lions. It doesn't stop. I don't know what it is. But this is a, you know, can you imagine me if a shepherd has shepherd gets his big talk show at night, you know, and every couple of nights he shows his favorite home movies he makes of himself playing with his guinea pig. And, you know, it's got all kinds of ridiculous, good morning, you know, how are you? Hey, what is it with Jack Parr and lions? What is this? Yeah, you know, to talk about cuckoo birds, I mean, when in doubt, Parr always rolls a lion film, you know. When in doubt, go to Lions. so I don't know. I just suggested, Earl walked in the studio, I just suggested, Earl, that if I got myself on these big talk shows at night, you know, how would they like it if I showed my home movies of me playing with my guinea pig? You know, oh, yeah, oh, I'm a guinea pig cuckoo. Oh, yeah, terrible, you know. shepherd whipping the guinea pig and shepherd feeding it a carrot, you know, making the guinea pig jump through paper hoops that are on fire and all that stuff. Oh, yeah, the time I got bit by the guinea pig. Oh, I've got a great film of it. Oh. Well, actually, Earl, it wasn't a guinea pig that got me. Seriously, I got a mean shot from a gerbil. Oh, they're mean. You got bitten by two gerbils? Twice, huh? You got two gerbils? Well, do they ever bite you, George? Hamster? I've never had a hamster bite, but I'll tell you, I had a gerbil one time give me a shot, and, I was told that this gerbil was a friendly gerbil, see, and I went over there, and I says, oh, hi, you know, and his name was Alfie, you know, I says, hello, Al, and I poked at the thing, I says, hello, Al, hello, and he comes up to the cage. No, he didn't do that. They're quicker than that. The gerbil comes walking over, and I'll tell you, it happened so fast that it would, canary bites can be, I've known several people have died from canary bites. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, yes. I saw a little news note the other day in the Times. A guy died of a bird kick. And, yes, kicked right in the gut with an ostrich. And headed to the ball game right there. So you can't mess around with animals. And I don't know, par with these lions, you know. I remember the days when he used to have people on his show. Do you remember? The guys like Alex King and all those great people. Man, oh, God. And what's worse, they're filmed lions. If I don't mind if he sits around on a panel with eight or nine live tigers and lions, you know. I mean, live, right there, you know. You may see some action, you know, who knows. But George, would you prepare the Stars and Stripes for me there, please? Earl, would you hold on a minute? Just one moment there, please. Stars and Stripes, tonight we are about to salute Americana night. Only in America could this happen. You know, we're living in the middle of probably the greatest time, the greatest kindness to criminals time the world has ever known. You know that? Isn't that true? Only in America, you know. We're very concerned over the criminal. And I don't know whether you saw this fantastic ad from the Star Ledger, the Newark Star Ledger, but we've just got to salute it. It's the greatest bank ad I've ever seen. It's an ad for a bank. Look at it. I'm putting this in my trivia file. So please, bring on my Stars and Stripes, please. As part of the public service program of this vast, deeply concerned radio station, tonight we once again salute America in action. Only in America. And here is an ad that we'd like to salute this outfit called the Broad National Bank of Newark, New Jersey. And this is from the Star Ledger of a couple of days ago. And it starts out and it says, to the two men who visited us last Monday, did you consider the alternatives? And there's a picture. It shows a clerk getting held up with a guy with a gun and he's got a bag over his head. It is an ad that was taken out, directed at the two criminals who robbed the bank. And hear what they say. You could have saved everyone a lot of trouble had you stopped long enough to gather all the facts about our bank before you visited us Monday and made that unauthorized withdrawal of $13,974.12. So, you were plagued with financial problems, right? Had you asked, you could have found that any one of our officers, including the one that you met Monday, would be most anxious to help you solve your money problems. Perhaps a low-interest loan would have been the solution. We make loans for everything imaginable, including quick business trips and vacations. I wonder if they give you a loan if you want to buy a Thompson submachine gun or something, you know? Enlarge your business. A little acetylene torch, you know, you want to buy. Says, we also provide new car financing. Well, I imagine John Dillinger went and financed his Hudson Terraplanes, you know, that he used for getaways down at the local bank, you know, 6% loan. It says, we also provide... You would have found that our officers like to say yes, and you could have taken up to 36 months to pay at our new low bank interest rate. You could also have stopped long enough to discover that we compound our interest on savings accounts. Yes, you could also have opened a free checking account while you were there, a checking account with no minimum balance requirements. Yes, had you two fellows bothered to explore all of the alternatives, you would have found that we could have helped you in a much more pleasant and certainly a safer manner. So, as part of our vast, all-encompassing public service programming on this station, once again we salute the advancing American scene. That's all right. This is WR New York. We cleared the decks there. Had to salute that. I just couldn't let that one go. Yeah. There. Kind of nice. I like the way that girl's looking at that Detective 38 special there. He's putting her right between the eyes. Well.
The night is gentle here in northern Georgia. In a small house surrounded by the Blue Ridge Mountains, 85-year-old Granny Shook is wrapping wild broom sedge into bundles, making hearth brooms. Nearby, in a house on Popcorn Creek, Juke Thompson is finishing a corncob pipe. Today he made 30 of them. And miles away, Mrs. Sarah Gibbs is sewing the last few pieces on a wedding ring quilt. Vista volunteers have helped bring these mountain craftsmen together to form a local co-op where they can make a better living with crafts that have been theirs for generations. Vista, with its domestic volunteers and the Peace Corps, serving in developing countries, together with thousands of retired men and women, giving of their time and talents, are all part of action. To learn how you may become a volunteer, write ACTION, Washington, D.C., 20525.
Hey, you know, hey, did you like that march? Did you like that? George, would you look on that same disc there, and you will find on that disc a piece of music that I really, really mastered. I want to tell you this. El Capitan. You got it there? El Capitan. Hey, you know, not only... You know, that brings up an idea, though, hearing this piece here. You know, the bank that takes out the ad to address it to the guys that held them up, and that you should have really come in and, you know, made a loan. I think they're missing the whole point of crime. But nevertheless, that brings up a whole new idea, just a fantastic new concept of advertising. And I wonder when the day's going to come when Macy's is going to take on a major ad for all the shoplifters. And you know, set aside a little department for them where, you know, all the stuff that Macy wants to get rid of, you know, the stuff that they haven't been selling for a long time. And they put it out, and they just, you know, a little section there for all the shoplifters to come and work on their techniques and a little workout section there. But it'll have to happen eventually because, you know, they say something like 10% of every store's stuff is stolen. And, you know, it's incredible the stuff that guys can get away with in stores. Yeah, that's a fact. You know that over in there's a joint over in Jersey. Listen to this one. There's a joint over in Jersey that a friend of mine knows about. And they have inside the place there, you know, it's a bar, a restaurant bar, you know, big, you know, one of these cocktail lounge type places. And inside, they had two gigantic stuffed penguins. I mean, like 5 feet high, biggies, you know, the great big ones. And, I guess it was the name of the place or something. So they had these two big penguins. And one night, right in the middle of everything, somebody got off, you know, made off with one giant stuffed penguin. Just got it out of there. Now, that ain't easy. I mean, you know, you're walking around out in the parking lot with a stuffed penguin. You're bound to attract some attention. So it takes fantastic talent. In fact, I saw a scene one time in a Cincinnati department store where I was there at the time. And this pretty interesting scene. Somebody came in, a couple of guys came in, and to the sporting goods department, and it's hard to believe, but walked right out with a 17-foot canoe. You know, one of these big green canoes, the paddles and everything in it. And there was a canoe, bam, gone. And nobody knows to this day how it got out of there, how they did it. It's just gone. Well, one of the great ones I've seen, though, I was actually there at the time it happened. I was right on hand when this happened. If you're ever in an office and something like this happens to you, be on guard, man. I was going to school. And I was going to college at the time, and I had a summer job in this radio station, TV and radio station. It was a combined operation. And it was right in the middle of Cincinnati. And they had offices, real good offices, you know, all kinds of the accounting department. They had the sales department, and they had the steno pool and all. Well, on Saturdays, there was nobody there, of course, except that the radio and television station, the operating force, was on. Now, there was announcers and engineers and stuff. But the offices were all quiet, and nobody was there. Well, one day, this is a Saturday, and I'm there on duty Saturday along with about five other guys. Somebody came in, big truck, and on the outside of the truck, it had something like ABC Office Supply Company. Very official-looking truck. And these guys have got coveralls. And on the coveralls, it said ABC Office Supply, and on the other side, it says Jerry or Fred, you know, over there. Over their pocket, and these guys walk in, and pretty soon one of them comes into the master control, and he's got a great big, looks a very official looking book with all kinds of numbers and stuff on it, and he said, anybody here can tell us who's supposed to be here to sign for this stuff? We're here from ABC, and the guy says, ABC what? He says, the ABC office equipment. He said, we're supposed to, this is the first of the month. And we have an order here for the first of the month to replace all the equipment you got here with new stuff. So we've got to take all your old equipment. See, because all of our office, we didn't even know it at the time, but all our office equipment was leased, you know, from some big outfit that supplies office equipment. It had a little tag on the side of it and all that. It says, we're from the company here, and we're going to take all the old stuff, and we're going to take this back to our warehouse. We're supposed to do it this weekend so that they'll have it for the work day Monday, and we'll bring back all the new stuff. As soon as we get this old stuff cleaned out. So, sure, you know, yeah, it looked very official. So he says, there's our tag. And sure enough, on every one of the typewriters and that was a tag that said ABC. That, by the way, that wasn't the real name of it, but I'm just inventing a name. So with that, these guys backed the truck up to the office. And within a half, they're just, you know, absolutely working just like anybody else. They're working around, unplugging the stuff there, unplugging all the calculating machines and that. And they're just loading them in and packing them into this truck. They took the typewriters. They took the mimeograph machine, the facsimile machines, every possible piece of office gear in the place. And they just packed it right up to the brim, the truck. Absolutely. They closed the doors. They give it to the guy that's, you know, the chief engineer or whatever he was on duty, and he signs for it. And brum, away goes the truck. Nobody thought a thing about it. I don't even have to tell you the rest, do I? I don't have to mention to you that place was in an uproar Monday. You never heard such hollering. People came to work, and everything was gone. Every type and whole bit was just cleaned out. So they didn't know what the story was. So immediately they figured that maybe the company had come and got the stuff. So they called up this company and says, what are you talking about? We're not supposed to take that stuff out till July 10th, like 9 months from now. We have nobody over there. And so immediately there was an investigation. See, they got the chief engineer. They called us all, and they says, what do these guys look like? Well, you know, guys, they came in, you know, they had coveralls. One guy was sort of tall. The other guy was kind of fat. What kind of truck did they have? Well, they had this big green truck. It said ABC on the side of it. Boy, what a job. Cleaned them out, like $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 worth of stuff. Well, I everybody's seen scenes like that. I everybody has his own favorite rip-off scene. But one of the better rip-offs that I've seen was very spectacular in a curious way was the time this radio station outside of Cincinnati, it was one of these stations that has a transmitter and everything out in the big field. You know, you've seen these transmitters down here off of the Jersey Turnpike. Well, this was a station that also had its studios out there, and it was a daytimer. Station came on like, 6:30 in the morning, went off like 7 o'clock at night, and it was a daytime station. Well, one day they came into the station. These boys just walked in there, turned the station on the air, and somebody had stole the console right out of the station. They took 2 turntables, they took 15 microphones, and 1 transmitter. They took the transmitter. They did leave the antenna. They left the tower out and back. And the whole thing was cleaned out. Well, of course, everybody was thrown into confusion because, this kind of stuff you cannot take. You'll concede, George, you do not take a Gates control board and a Western Electric transmitter. You don't take that down to the hawk shop. You can't pawn it, see? So everybody's figuring, what the hell are they going to do with it, see? What's going to happen? So, disappears. Well, 2 or 3 months went by, maybe 6 months, when all of a sudden another radio station was hit. There was great confusion that they came in the morning to turn on the transmitter and turn on everything, and this time a whole rack of preamps are gone. Rack and panel preamplifiers, including the tape boards, the whole deck, see? They can't. This was an entirely different radio station. Well, that began to get serious, and so people were a little worried about it. And in the meantime, incidental stuff would disappear. All kinds of strange things, like Ampexes would go. A station would be hit right in the middle of the night, an Ampex would go. Well, this continued for roughly a year. The story I'm telling you, by the way, is a kind of legend. This story is, as a matter of fact, spoken of with great awe among broadcasters. So if you're a broadcaster, you probably know the story because it's a famous thing. It actually happened, remember. I'm not inventing a damn thing here. This is the truth. And it's a kind of a milestone case. This all happened out in Cincinnati. So within about a year and a half, there were probably 25 to 30 robberies of radio stations where Ampex would disappear and all kinds of, but very heavy, highly technical and extremely specialized equipment, the kind of stuff you could no way use at home. No way you could take a Gates control board and use it at home. Nothing. So nobody could figure out what was going on. And of course, the detectives and everything were watching all the ads and broadcasting and billboard, wherever any kind of this equipment would be advertised. It never showed up. It never surfaced. None of this stuff surfaced, which really did throw everybody. Until one day, it was about 2 years later, maybe a year and a half, in Kentucky, not too far from Cincinnati, there was a farmer. And this farmer would drive down this road, an old road that he drove down every couple of days on his way to his East 40 or someplace out there, way out in the boondocks. And he used to pass this old tin Quonset hut. There had been an old Quonset hut that had been built there years before, locked up, and whatever was in it, the old farm machinery or something, abandoned, and just nobody was ever in there. It was just an old building. That was it. But he began to notice, once in a while, when he'd drive down there, there would be a guy walking in and out of there. Somebody would be going in there. Began to wonder about this thing. Like years he'd seen this building and nobody'd been in it. Now suddenly there's a guy in there, or at least 2 or 3. So he began to ask around town. He comes in town and says, what are they doing with that Quonset hut down there? That isn't the way he said it. I mean, if you know anything about Campbell County, Kentucky, the way he said it was, hey, who's gone there messing around that old Quonset hut down there? Near Luke Arkin's place, huh? Well, somebody said nobody's down there. Luke's doing nothing with this. At which point, 3 or 4 of the guys got together and they went down this road, and they parked in the trees down there with a pair of binoculars, and they watched this building, and they noticed that absolutely for sure that guys were coming and going. 3 guys would come in, and 3 guys, would leave. And so the farmer gets in touch with Luke, and he says, Luke, he said, there's somebody messing around down that building down there. Is that old building you got, that old Quonset hut you got down there? Somebody's in there. At which point, Luke and his boys go down there, and they open it up, and they could not believe what they saw. The Quonset hut had been completely built inside with insulating material, glass. These guys had built a complete radio station in the Quonset hut. Now, wait, you haven't heard the rest of the story, though. You would automatically think, well, what they were going to do was they were going to apply for a license and go on the air. No way. You know what these guys were doing? These were three guys. It's fantastic. These people broke in, and they, of course, called the police and everything else, and so they laid a trap on. They wanted to figure out what they're doing. So late that night, these three guys showed up, and they watched them. And you wouldn't believe what they did. It was like right out of a Tennessee Williams play or strange drama, that this is what showbiz will do to these to people. That these three guys, for years, had been knocking around trying to make it in radio. And none of them had ever even got a foot in the door. No way. And so every night, these three guys would come down and play radio. Believe it or not. They actually would do shows. The guy had turntables. They had even news equipment in there. The guys even had teletypes and stuff. And these guys had a complete stolen ersatz radio. So everything except an antenna. They could have actually put it on the air had they gotten an antenna and done it. Of course, then they would have been caught immediately had they gone on the air. But these guys would come down there and do shows. And they nabbed the three of them. It's a strange thing. I knew one of them. That's how I happened to... I knew one of them, and this guy had no idea this guy was doing this kind of stuff. He was a guy that used to come down and had gotten himself a little job. By the way, something like guys that work around here. He'd gotten himself a little job on the weekend, doing the log or something for the radio station. Everybody thought he was a very straight, legit guy. At night, he's down there playing Star. Series of strange events. Well, of course, it hit the fan. This was like, $100,000. This is grand larceny. You don't give guys, that have robbed places for $100,000, especially federally licensed radio stations. You don't give them a 6-week suspended sentence. I mean, because obviously they have been doing this over a period of like 2 years. Well, one guy got 2 years in the federal penitentiary. Because it's a federal offense, One guy got 2 years in the federal pen. The other two guys, I think, even got more. Well, time went on. These guys are now in the slam. You got it? Time went on. Would you believe it? I am now working in Philadelphia. Strange scene. I get a letter, a special delivery letter from a radio station in Kansas someplace. Some little station way out, Abilene, Kansas. And in the letter, I opened it, I said, what are they writing me for? I opened this thing up, and it's the manager of the radio station telling me that a guy has given my name as a reference, and he wants to work in this radio station. And who is it? It's one of those three. Now, what do you write back? What do you say? Now, there's a moral dilemma. You write back and say, "Yeah, he's absolutely straight. He's one of the greatest guys I've ever known." Or do you just ignore it? What do you do? Now, of course, your first impression, the first idea you'd have would be to say, "Oh, give the guy a chance, right out there and say." But can you imagine what would happen if I'd written that letter out there and said he's great, and 5 days later the transmitter disappears, along with the new weekend staff announcer? Now, how's that for a rip-off? You ever heard one that elaborate? That was a fantastic scene. And if you ever wrote a play, and I'll tell you this as a writer, if you ever wrote a play where three guys have built a radio station out of stolen equipment, that would be dismissed locally as another example of fantasy comedy, black humor. Come on, this is a... a surrealistic play. And yet those guys had spent probably 6 or 7 months every night in this shack playing radio. And nobody who they were involved with, two of them were married, by the way, nobody they were involved with had any idea where they were going at night. Talk about a fantasy scene, man. Well, I'll tell you, that I one time had, speaking of ripoffs, let me tell you one more ripoff, a fantastic ripoff. This was the most creative ripoff I've ever seen that I was ever involved in. Truly creative ripoff. I was in, I was in New Faces. We're talking about a ripoff. I was in a Broadway play, a Broadway show, right? And one of the scenes in the show involved a situation where I was sitting with another character, and the two of us, where the big scene was, the two of us were sitting, one was sitting at a desk, and I came in to the scene and sat at the desk with her. And it was like a 2-minute scene, and the whole scene was built around the fact that this girl was typing. She had a typewriter. It was supposed to be a big electric typewriter, and she was typing stuff as I was talking. She was supposed to be so, you know, on top of it that she could talk on the phone and talk to me at the same time, and all the while she's typing letters. See, so that night the play, the curtain goes up. And everything is set. We check our props. Everything's cool. To this day, I don't know how this happened. Everything's cool. The play progresses about 15 minutes, this production. When our cue came on, the curtain goes up. She, of course, sits down in the dark. The curtain goes up, and I walk out, and the typewriter has been ripped off. Somebody stole the typewriter right off the stage. Right in the middle of the production, because it was there in the beginning. Now you figure that one, man. And I had another one happen to me, though, that that's a real ripoff. But nobody ever found out where it was. The prop man was blowing his gasket, you know, because he got blamed for it, and we wound up, you know, all big hassle. But one other one that I had happen to me. I don't know how I got on the subject, but I was doing the cut-ins on a network television show. Cut-ins. This was a network show, a summer television show that was sponsored by Nabisco, as a matter of fact. And it was a TV show, big network, one-hour show. And they had three cut-ins in each half-hour section of the show. Now, what the cut-in was, that they came on the screen with visuals. These visuals were like slides and stuff and various... Yes, I see, Jerry. Slides and stuff, and I would talk over the in the booth when the cue came. I would do the commercial for Nabisco. Well, I did the first three spots. By the way, it's a live show. There were like 250 people in the audience, or better, maybe closer to 1,000. A packed theater, and this was a glass booth that was up and above the stage, and I could look down and see the audience. And off to my right, I could also see the TV, the stage where the show was being done. And it was a live show. So I did the first three cut-ins. It was very hot in this booth. And I made the network break. You know, this is NBC. And I walked out of the booth, which was standard. I walked around the booth a bit, and I had about 4 minutes to go before this big cut-in. Their big commercial came 10 minutes before the end of the show. Well, At 7 or 8 minutes beforehand, I've got my copy. See, I'm looking at the copy, and I walk into the booth. The booth was dark. It was purposely dark, so that the people couldn't watch what I was doing and that distract from the show. It was dark, and I had a desk lamp, a little tiny lamp, that I could read my copy with. And so I walk into the studio, and I sit down. I look at the copy, and I put on my earphones, which was connected to the control room where the director was calling the shot. So I hear the director in there, and I had a little talkback switch. In fact, it was one of these headsets that has a little microphone that swings down from a little boom mic, see? So he says to me, he says, "Shep, you ready to go?" And I said, "Yep, I'm ready." In the booth. He said, "Okay." He says, you're going in exactly 47 seconds. And so I look up at the big clock was lit in there, and I see it, you know, it's coming. He starts counting down. He says, 15 seconds, start rolling film. And see, I was doing the narration over a film. He says, 15 seconds, real film is rolling. And I see it come on the monitor. He says, 5 seconds, 4 seconds, 3 seconds. You ready, Shep? Go. So I start reading the copy, and I see the commercial on the screen, and I'm reading the copy away in there. And I hear his voice again come into the headset, and he says, "Where's Shep? Where are you? Where's Shep?" And I said, I hit the button on my earphone, my headset, and I says, "I'm in here." He says, "Well, go. I says, "What do you think I'm doing?" So at that point, I go back and I start reading the copy again. And I can hear pandemonium in the control room. They are shouting and yelling and hollering. And people kept hollering, "What's the matter with the booth? Hey, signal the booth. Where's the talk over? Hey, Shepard, where are you?" Well, I don't know what's going on, of course. And all the while, this is going out the full NBC television network. The full network. This is like 400 stations. And it's a main, major account. This is NBC, and this was National Biscuit Company, as a matter of fact. And the particular product we were doing was Ritz crackers, these Ritz crackers. So I'm working away, and I can see the stuff on the screen, but there's no voice coming out. So I figured, well, maybe I better project more. So I start projecting. And at that point, I hear the director say, "Forget it. We blew it. We blew it." He says, "We blew the commercial. We blew it." He says, "Go back to live on stage." He says, "Cue Chuck." And at that point, the live show comes back on, and instantly, the director is on the intercom. He says, "Where the hell are you, Shepard?" And I hit the button. I says, "What do you mean, where am I? I've been in this booth all the time, and I've been reading the copy." He says, "Well, we haven't been getting it up here." I says, come on down and see." They thought I booted it, see. With that, the AD, the assistant director, comes running around, and of course, there I am. I'm sitting in the booth. And we threw on the lights. He threw on the lights to see what the hell's going on. Somebody had stolen the microphone. Right out of the major network television studio in the middle of a show. And since it was dark, see, and the mic hung down, the mic was out of the range of the light. That's why I never really saw that it wasn't there. Because the mic had always been there. It was a hanging mic from a boom, you see. And it had always been there, and I'd used it many times, and it just was part of the scenery, you know. It's like if you walk in your house, you expect the light switch to be on the wall. You don't expect it to disappear overnight. Well, it was gone. Well, the teletype started to go. I mean, the teletype, the ticker tape back and forth from New York all over the country. What happened to the damn commercial? Who booted the commercial? It's ticking back and forth. And I remember the director sitting down and sending the following telegram. Commercial missed due to microphone stolen between third and fourth network cut-in. And he sent it off, see? He said, "It's all I could do." He says, "I had to tell him what happened, see?" So he sent it off. About 5 minutes later, this wire comes back. Says, "You're out of your mind. Are you drinking or what? Tell us the truth." They refused to believe it, that somebody had stolen the microphone right out of the studio. I don't know who did it. It had to take somebody who knew something about technique. You had to know something about the technical end of this baby. You don't just, you know, no fan could just walk in there and rip that baby off. First of all, he couldn't get in there. Oh, yes. Oh, now you're starting me. I'm not even going to bother to tell you about the time that I worked in a television station where right out of a studio, our only color camera was stolen. Complete with the truck and everything that it worked on. And with about, 75 feet of this color coax cable, which comes at about $100 a foot. Stole it right out of the studio. And we were so proud of it. We just got it 2 weeks before. Just had our call letters put on the side, you know. Gone. And so you think you've been ripped off. Listen, I know a guy who had everything taken out of his refrigerator one night. Nothing else. Nothing else touched in the house. This was in the village. Somebody came in and just took his milk and his old lettuce. They took his can of Blatt's beer he had in there. Oh. Yeah, this is W.O.